Hi there, welcome to the latest edition of The Front Page. In this week's show, we'll be looking back at Super Saturday at Newbury, asking whether we expect a Super Cheltenham Festival again for William Mullins, and looking at some of the week's other big stories. My name is Lee Mottershead. I'm joined in the studio by colleagues Jonathan Harding and Liam Head. And Liam, you were with me at Newbury on Saturday for Super Saturday. You wrote the big gross report on Joyeuse's victory in the William Hill hurdle. She was impressive.
She was, and it was almost a mirror of what we'd seen 12 months ago with Aberico Lord, obviously Nicky Henderson, JP McManuson, and Nico de Boinville all enjoyed victory in that race 12 months ago. They did so again, and it was a perfect ride from de Boinville, timed to perfection. And you know, she looks for a mare that's obviously very lightly raced, she looks very good for the future.
But that future won't include the Cheltenham Festival. Because, as anyone who watched Matt Chapman's interview with Nicky Henderson on Sky Sports Racing will have picked up quite clearly, she can't run there. Rules have changed since last year's Cheltenham Festival. At that point, if you wanted to run in a non-novice handicap hurdle, you needed to have raced four times over hurdles already. Now they've increased that to five. Joyeuse has run four times over hurdles, not five. She actually sneaked into the William Hill hurdle because of a slight loophole whereby novices had to have run four times over hurdles, but she wasn't a novice, and therefore she sneaked through on that occasion. She can't sneak through at Cheltenham. Matt's interview with Menkley, he views it as like bonkers, was one of his phrases. Nicky Henson was a bit more diplomatic, but you sense he might agree with him. But Nicky acknowledged me afterwards that JP McManus, in his Racing Post column earlier, or towards the end of last year, JP's Joyeuse owners, was supportive of the BHA rule change. I think it's a good idea. I think it means that punters and the handicappers have got more knowledge of horses before they go into those handicaps. You're not as likely to get a horse like State Man dotting up massively unexposed, and that sort of horse anyway should probably be in one of the grade one novice events. So I like it, but I'm not one to lead a witness. Liam, do you like it?
It's a very confusing rule, you know, the fact
that diplomatic answer.
Yeah, it's been changed. It is a shame that, I mean, Joyeuse could still run again, I believe, and get into the festival.
But she'd have to do that before February 24.
Yeah.
So what are we on now? February the 10th?
Yeah, so obviously it doesn't give a lot of time before the festival. Yeah, it won't happen. No. Which is a shame to see a winner of that race not go into one of those handicaps, as you mentioned. It does question the actual rule change, because it almost stops these horses from competing, you know, on the bigger stages.
Maybe they just need to tickle it then to say something along the lines of novices who haven't had five runs over hurdles can't go. Maybe that would be a change they could make. I wouldn't necessarily think it needs to be in there though.
Yeah, I mean, you can tickle all you like, but I just think, you know, I don't want to get splinters sitting on the fence. I'm slightly of the Nicky Henderson diplomatic view. I think it's a well-intentioned rule. If it gets better horses and more horses competing against each other at the start of the season and fewer State Man type situations where they're coming in and just sort of cleaning up horses that should be in
the Supreme,
like you say. But yeah, I'm actually not as outraged about the rule. You usually get a rule will be implemented, everyone will be broadly receptive to it, there'll be an anomaly, and then there's sort of this faux outrage about it. I just think this is a very unique case. Obviously you want to see a horse like her running at the festival. It's a quirk of just her slightly odd and unconventional career that she can't now run at the festival in something like a mare's hurdle. So I just think, yeah, it's one of those.
Yeah, it is a unique case. And she could actually run in the mare's hurdle if they wanted to. Because it applies to handicaps. So she could go in the grade one, but she raced off such a relatively low mark compared to grade one horses on Saturday that would be a humongous...
She's slightly fallen between the cracks of handicaps and grade ones.
Yeah, she has. But you're always going to get, now and again, cases like that. When you write rules, you probably always find that there's a horse that comes along that doesn't necessarily fit within what you intended within a rule. And she's probably one of those. But in general terms, I think it's a good idea. That's my view anyway.
Just on that race, I must also praise Sam Thomas for lump sum finishing second. Top weight in the race, you know, he fantastic run to finish behind Joyous in that race at Newbury. His last two runs before that, he'd been beaten by Sergino and Constitution Hill, so fair play for everyone involved with that.
Yeah, and it was a seventh William Hill hurdle for, well, it was the first William Hill hurdle for Nicky Henderson, because it's previously won it as the Betfair hurdle.
What did we call it before then?
So it was the Betfair hurdle before the William Hill hurdle. Before that was a Tote Sport trophy. Before that was a Tote Gold trophy. Before that was a Schweppes Gold trophy.
Yeah, somebody called it the Schweppes to me the other day.
Yeah. No chance now. What else did we have on Saturday? So you were writing about the Game Spirit Chase, weren't you? Master Chewy won that one for Nigel Twist and Davis. Probably goes to the Ryanair Chase, as does Jello.
Jello, yeah, for Venetia Williams, who won the Denman Chase. And yeah, it was a good day. I mean, just on, obviously, in the Game Spirit, obviously the Twist and Davis team had two horses. Matata was the favourite with the absentee of Sergino in that race. And the Cheltenham Festival pictures obviously become a lot clearer. Master Chewy now, Nigel Twist and Davis said to myself after the race that the Ryanair was, you know, probably the route for him at the Cheltenham Festival, and Matata would go for the Champion Chase. So that sort of cleared that conundrum up for them. And Jello obviously was very impressive again, given an absolute peach of a ride by Charlie Deutsch.
Yeah, the market was very much in his favour. Brave Man's Game was a big drifter on the day. Jello was a big mover. He probably goes now for, let's say, the Ryanair Chase. But Paul Nicholls seemed genuinely happy with the runs of Hitman and Brave Man's Game, who are both going to be featuring in the Grand National Weights when they're unveiled Tuesday. So tomorrow, as we're talking now in London, Paul would expect certainly Brave Man's Game to be dropped a couple of pounds. Can't see him winning a Grand National myself, Brave Man's Game.
I don't know. It's a different race now, and everyone's going to be sick of hearing that, but it is a different race. It does require a different type of horse. And you just think with Brave Man's Game, he's never run so poorly that you think he's totally lost it, but he's never run so well that you think he's fully bounced back. And I just feel as though a different test, a different type of fence, just something to freshen him up a little bit. Because he is a good jump in the main, in the round. I think it could bring out a little bit more from him and just freshen him up again.
Okay. Do you like him as a Grand National horse?
I do indeed.
Obviously, Buffer being negative now.
Paul Nicholls obviously said that the good thing is with Brave Man's Game is he's still enjoying his racing.
Yeah.
And that run on Saturday would have brought him on an awful lot. But the Grand National is obviously a whole different ball game. I do quite fancy one of his other stable mates, the Can Do Kid.
Yeah, he was sweet on him, wasn't he, when he was talking?
So it's exciting for the yard to go into that sort of prestigious race with, you know, got a couple of chances.
And a bit more Grand National news. I spoke to Venetia Williams after Jello's win for the colour piece on Saturday, and she was making clear that L'Empresse was not a speculative entry for the Grand National. He'd been sort of, one of his owners, Andy Edwards, had been very downbeat about the idea of going for the National a while ago, but Venetia's pretty enthused about the prospect and thinks he could be the right sort of type for the race. So weights come out Tuesday. Putting you on the spot now, we haven't rehearsed this bit. Any horse in the Grand National that you're particularly keen on, looking forward to seeing in the weights tomorrow? Excited about? Thinking about?
It's not highly original, but I did like Can Do Kid, actually. Okay. I think Nicholls has got a really strong hand. He hasn't quite got the ammunition for Cheltenham, but I think he'll have a big entry.
Okay. Liam, anything?
I mean, again, Can Do Kid, I thought he was terrific at Newbury last time. But obviously, Willie Mullins is no doubt going to have you'd like to think he'll have another say in the race again.
And Gavin Cromwell, I think, will have a good... He looks to have a strong hand.
Yeah, okay. I like Iroko, that's not very original. And Beauport, I loved his running the long walk hurdle. And I was a huge fan of Corbière many, many years ago. He runs in the same colours. Dan Skelton won't win the Grand National this year. He hasn't got a runner, but he will have a runner in the Arkle and in many other big races at Cheltenham. Lotus Sud, were we impressed or not at Warwick on Saturday?
you just don't learn anything with a long odds-on shot winning like that for me. I mean, I don't think you can necessarily be impressed. I think he's just shown that he's the horse that we thought he was.
And Rubo's not a bad horse he's up against.
No, I don't think he was taken out of his comfort zone particularly for me. But look, I think he's goes to the Arkle with a live chance. I don't think he'll win the Arkle. I think that's probably Sergino's to lose. But it was more a poignant success than one that made me think that was one that I really need to study.
Yes, absolutely.
Obviously with the loss of John Hales.
Yeah. And he made a good move down that side of the course. You got those five fences, but you've really got to jump, like you said. He got tired towards the end. Could be a good race, the Arkle. We're all obviously all hoping that Sergino, his issue is over very quickly. As we're talking now, we've not had any Monday updates from Nicky Henderson, but he's still the horse to beat. Madge was impressive at Leopardstown. Could you see Lodisud winning an Arkle?
I couldn't see him beating Sergino, no. I just think what Sergino did, you know, we've touched on it many times, what he did at Kempton to Ballyburn was just so easy on the eye, and it was really impressive. But it is shaping up to be, you know, a really hot race. Obviously, Willie Mullins with Madbury as well. So you'd like to think that they'd all get there in one piece and we can have a really good renewal.
Brilliant, you mentioned Willie Mullins, so seamless link now. We're going to go into commercial break. When we come back, we'll be asking which Willie Mullins horses will win the festival and which ones maybe won't. Welcome back to the front page. I want to talk Willie Mullins now. He has been mentioned on one or two editions of the front page and other racing media content productions in recent times, but he's talking about now because he had a big media day last week prior to the Cheltenham Festival. These media days, the festival, they've become earlier and earlier and earlier. I mean, we're only just in February and we're having big media days.
Yeah, we'll start talking. Maybe we'll have a pre-Christmas Cheltenham Media Day next year.
It's going that way. So he went through all the big guns, the big stars, and it feels as though in recent days, what already looked like was going to be a typically strong Willie Mullins squad has got even stronger with the likes of Kopech Debord and Majb. Obviously, Galopin the Show was really impressive. At the DRF. We talked about the DRF on the show last week, but just in general terms, what we think about in terms of Willie's squad this year, I mean, is he going to dominate the festival top trainer market?
Yeah, I think he'll be top trainer. I don't think he'll dominate in the way perhaps he has in previous years. I think a lot is going to hinge on, in particular, Nicky Henderson, with the Sergino, John Bon, Lulamba. I've probably missed one there. Constitution Hill, missed the big one.
Yeah.
You know, if he wins three or four of those, then you're thinking suddenly it's a bit more of a conversation. But I just think with the horses he has at his disposal, and we're not even spoken about what he might have for the handicaps as well, I think he'll be top trainer. It's just a matter of how many he's top trainer by.
Okay. You simply positive?
Yeah, I mean, he obviously had a bit of a sticky patch before Christmas and over the festive
a rare
break.
Sticky patch.
It was
quite a short sticky patch, wasn't it?
And we obviously seen him bounce back at the Dublin Racing Festival, and the string are obviously firing on all cylinders now, which is great for racing fans. As Jonathan said, I don't think he'll have quite the sort of firepower in terms of numbers of winners as he's had the last few years, because I think the likes of Nicky Henderson, Dan Skelton, you know, Gordon Elliott, there will be more competition. A lot of these big other trainers now are also in good form, and it's an exciting time for a various amount of trainers.
Yeah, three extra handicaps too this year, with the National Chase, the Novice Handicap Chase that was the Turners, and the Cross Country Chase all as handicaps this year. Did they say Cross Country Chase twice, or did they say National Chase? One for you to rewind back and just check I didn't mess that up, viewers. Willie Mullins then, what we could do, we had a piece in the Racing Post last week, we asked some of our experts whether some of these hot pots were bankers or blowouts. Didn't ask you two, and you two were clearly experts.
Well.
Yeah. So, five horses, Kopeck Debord, Supreme, banker or blowout?
Banker.
Banker.
Big banker. Final demand in the turners.
I don't want to say blowout. Blowout seems harsh. Not a banker.
Yeah, not a banker. That's much more. Yeah.
Not a banker. New Lions, very good. Yeah. And a couple others in there.
Yes.
I'm sitting on the fence of this one a little bit. I just, like, the New Lion, obviously, what we've seen at Newbury was impressive. And now he's in the silks of JP McManus. So maybe we'll sit on the fence for a bit for that one.
Okay. All right. Okay. This one could be interesting. Ballyburn. I'm a big Ballyburn fan. And the results of my Cheltenham Festival punting could largely depend on how Ballyburn fares.
You'll love this then, not a banker.
Okay.
Very good, clearly. Still, you know, I think there's improvement to come logically. Tighten up his jumping a little bit, so he's quite obviously the one to beat, but I don't think he's a banker by any stretch. I think Dancing City is very interesting.
But you're not bringing blowout back into the conversation?
No, there won't be Willie Mullins, there won't be a blowout.
Okay.
You just might
so
not
you're
win.
Not hostile towards him?
No, not in the slightest. No. And I'd never put you off.
No, bless you.
I just think, yeah, I think that one is a slightly more competitive than people would maybe billing it as.
Okay. What about you, Liam?
Banker for me, yeah.
Good man.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's right. Factor Fire, Liam, in the Ryanair, it seems. Good Ryanair chase too.
Yeah, it's shaping up to be arguably one of the hottest races of the week, really. And obviously, I am a big Factor Fail fan, and I think he will be tough to beat in that race.
They'll probably use his jumping more, won't they?
Yeah.
What he was saying in that media day, that they felt maybe they hadn't been using his jumping properly, dropping back in or going up in distance. Maybe have a short trip to let him.
Yeah, and I think obviously it's, you know, with these big races, the more experience you get beforehand, the better. And I just think what we've seen in his career, he is a fantastic horse.
Yeah, he is. Banker?
Not a banker. No. I think it's a perfect race for him.
Okay.
I really do.
Yeah.
Again, you know, it's kind of, you'd be relatively brave to take him on. I just think that race is such that it does look like one of the more competitive. And
yeah.
I think there's a few in there who could run big races. I think Protectorat will run a big race as well.
Yeah, Ile Francais, think he'll go there?
I'd run him in the Champion Chase.
Would you?
But I don't own him.
Okay. No. One day.
Unfortunately.
Maybe. One day. And this one should be easy, surely. Galopin de Chaux will win the Gold Cup, won't he?
Big old banker.
Yeah.
Big banker.
I really just can't see who beats him.
No.
Unless
neither.
He beats himself somehow and there's a mishap or a mistake. I just can't see it.
I agree. And finally, anything of Willie Mullins' Cliff Sutton challenge? I know we're still, a month out yet, so things will develop. And he didn't talk about many handicappers in the media morning. Anything at bigger prices that you quite like?
I mean, I've touched on it. I do like Dancing City. That's not it's not a big, big price, but not many of Willie Mullins' festival horses are. And he'll probably win the bumper with his third or fourth string. That's the usual form.
Okay. You?
Not looked that far in to deeper down the fields, but he'll be there.
Okay, yeah. I like, shall I tell you what I like?
Go for
please.
It.
Please.
Yeah. So, Absurd. If he goes back to the County Hurdle, I think you have a massive chance. And like DJ, David Jennings, in his column on Saturday, he mentioned Ethical Diamond for the County Hurdle. So I've had a bit on both those two in.
You've got quite the portfolio going into Cheltenham.
Yeah. You'll all go disastrously wrong.
At this point, you know.
It's the hope that kills you.
The dream's alive.
The dream is alive. Was looking forward to the Cheltenham Festival. Jumps fans, all racing fans, will be praying and hoping for good news about Michael O'Sullivan, who had a terrible fall at Thurles on Thursday. He was airlifted to hospital, and we all send our best wishes to Michael, his family, and all those looking after him. There's also sad news last week about the Aga Khan, one of the truly great owner breeders over very many decades. His death was announced at the age of 88. Guys, the Aga Khan, an enormously rich legacy. And if you talk about the mighty owner breeders, he's right up there with them, not least because probably more than most, maybe akin only to Judd and what late Prince Carl Abdullah. He was almost purely an owner breeder. He very occasionally dipped into the sales scene, but Bush and Groom in the 70s, and he certainly got involved in dispersals, most recently the Lagardère dispersal. He got some new blood into the families then, but basically he raced horses that he bred, and with enormous success. Obviously you two are slightly younger than myself, so I'll maybe have some memories of older Aga Khan horses, but in recent years, any have stood out to you two?
Yeah, I like Tanawa a lot. Yeah. When she finished second in the Arc, speaking to Dermot Weld after that, you know, she was hugely talented.
Yeah.
I mean, more recently, obviously, Tahira winning the Irish 2000 and winning at Royal Ascot, yeah. Very good. I mean, just when you see those silks, even though I was not even an idea when Shergar was running.
Yeah.
You do have that appreciation of the history and of those old horses. So you don't have to necessarily have been there to understand the impact that he had. And those silks are just, you just think excellence, don't you? You think breeding excellence, you think blue blooded horses, you think top Group 1 performers. And yeah, it's a real loss as well for the sport, just in the sense that these owner breeders don't come along that often.
No.
They are very difficult to replace, if they can even be replaced. And I suppose the job for racing is to find the next generation of people who not only have the money, because the money is only half of it, but the passion and the attention to detail that the Aga Khan had with his breeding operation. So a massive loss for all those who trained for him and all those who just liked watching his horses run.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the good thing is his daughter, Princess Zara, is a huge racing fan. And generally, when they've had big winners in recent years, she's been representing her father on the racecourse. I'm sure the operation will continue, not least because, Liam, he was very clear in making it, maybe commercial's not quite the right word, but it had to pay for itself. He wasn't just chucking money at it. He was very careful in which stallions he used. He sold horses well. Obviously, De Lamy, most of his big races in Godolphin colours, despite the fact he's was bred by the Argan race initially for the Aga Khan. What about you? Any horses stood out for you in recent years from the Aga Khan?
Yeah, I think Tahira as well. But I think, as like Jonathan said, the financial side of things is obviously a massive help, but it's that enthusiasm he had for so long and the connections that it brought. You only have to look at the endless amounts of tributes that we've seen, you know, on many in the Racing Post, in the paper and online as well, just show what sort of figure he was as a person, and just to have that longevity in the sport for so long, you don't get many people like that in this sport, and he will be a massive loss for everyone, but it is important that his legacy does continue.
Yeah,
you absolutely. Got a favourite, Lee?
Oh yeah, so in I'll
have to press
before.
You for three.
Well, yeah, you can do that easily. So in the 80s, when I was slightly younger, Stout Swinburne was my team. Was a massive fan of the Stout stable. Walter Swinburne was my favourite jockey, and in those days in Britain anyway, most of the Argus best horses raced for them. So Shergar, I've got a picture of the one thing I've bought one thing at a charity auction. And it was a Birdie original, Darren Bird of Shergar. So that's in my study at home. Sharistani, our bloodstock editor, Andrew Scutts, and his wife, Jo, huge fans of Sharistani, as I was as well. And John Randall wrote in one of his pieces during the week that he was would have been better for him had he not won the Derby, because he wouldn't have been remembered as a lucky Derby winner, but one that most unlucky Derby losers. I thought he was a great horse, Sharistani. Yes, he wasn't Dancing Grave. He was superb in the Irish Derby. And yeah, through those 80s, well, he had another good horse called Shadari, won what is now the Jumbo International. And as a measure of how big the Argus stable was in those days, in that 1986 year, when Sharistani won the Derby and Shadari won the International, they had a horse called Diastan, who won the Hardwick Stakes and the September Stakes, but was used as a pacemaker on a couple of occasions, including in the King George. They had that much.
Nice problem to have, isn't it?
Nice problem to have. And again, this sounds like a daft thing to say, but the most gorgeous colours. That green with the red epaulettes, so beautiful. That's true, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite deep, but yeah, I like that. Yeah, you do have these sort of, it's not weird affinities, you just do have these associations with certain colours, you know, over jumps equally. Yeah. And the Aga Khans are among the most instantly recognisable, I would say. Maybe them, Jubmont and
Godolphin, isn't it?
Godolphin, obviously.
Absolutely, they stand out. And there's one other thing about the Aga Khan was, although his grandfather was famously had this catchphrase, speed, speed, more speed, the Aga Khan's majority of his best horses were proper, old-fashioned, middle-distance types, such as Calandigan, who last year really wore the colours with pride, and let's hope he does as well in 2025.
You can't forget Shergar as well.
Shergar, one thing, actually, just if you go back to the back catalogue, I did a piece about Shergar and Walter Swinburne and that year's Derby a few years ago. I adored Shergar. But also, if you go on YouTube, there's countless YouTube clips of Shergar winning the Derby. But there's one with the commentary from Peter Bromley, who was the BBC radio commentator for decades, had a very distinctive voice, and he was one that came up with that great line, you need a telescope to see the rest. So, big up Peter Bromley's commentary on Shergar's Derby. Finally, just a plug for my column in today's Racing Post, which Racing Post digital subscribers can get as well. There was a Westminster Hall debate on Wednesday last week on gambling harms. It's pretty depressing, really, because lots of the MPs in there, Labour MPs, Lib Dem MPs, referencing gambling as a public health issue, something that we've written about a lot. Clearly, problem gambling is a public health issue, but gambling per se is not a public health issue. That was repeated lots of times. Some stats that we use have been shown to be wrong in the past, but they were used repeatedly. And we had the new Tewkesbury MP, a Liberal Democrat who replaced Lawrence Robertson, who was a massive racing fan. But Cameron Thomas, the new Tewkesbury MP, he described himself as a horse racing sceptic, which had gone down really well at Cheltenham, who he now represents as their MP. Yeah, all pretty dismal stuff, really.
It is, and it all plays into the same theme, which is just a certain ignorance, I think, or an unwillingness to perhaps see the other side of the debate and understand that, you know, the regulation and the things that are potentially being brought in are already causing irreparable harm, but could cause pretty catastrophic harm to the sport. I just think viewing it as a public health issue is a complete misdiagnosis. I think it's this idea that gambling is anything other than a pastime enjoyed by people in a responsible manner, for the most part. I understand that problem gambling is an issue. I understand that more should have been done and still needs to be done to combat that, and that is a public health issue. But this idea of tarring it all with the same brush shows, I think, possibly just an unwillingness to dig a little bit deeper and listen to people who are knowledgeable on the subject. And it shows, for me, just how big a mountain racing and its leaders have to climb to actually convince people to listen to their case.
They do, but it also shows why it's important that we in the media and you as punters and racing fans keep making your voice heard. That then is the end of this week's edition. Thanks to Liam and to Jonathan. Thank you to you for watching. We shall return next week. Until then, bye-bye.